Home isn't just a place, it's a state of mind. Like curling up in a comfy chair as you watch the world go by.
Good afternoon.
Which is why at Delta, our people do our best to make you feel at home long before you get there. Delta, keep climbing.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Gold Mines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to Comedy Gold Mines, where we do what here? What do we do on Comedy Gold Mines, huh? The world can tell me. The world can tell me. As a matter of fact, I know you can. You know how I know? Because you're listening and you're loving it. We get inside the minds of amazing comedians, and oh my God, today, what an amazing mind we have. One of the most creative, one of the most active, one of the most physical, one of the most brilliant fucking people to touch a stage, touch a joke, and include the perks of life surroundings in these jokes. I'm talking about JB motherfucking Smooth. JB, welcome to Comedy Gold Mines.
They say on the old TV shows, you said a mouthful.
I said a mouthful. You know, my wife has never heard me give an introduction on Comedy Gold Mines, and judging by her face, JB, she's blown away.
Ooh-wee.
She's never heard it. She's blown away. JB, I believe in starting my podcast off by giving flowers, right? Mm. This is a positive podcast, JB.
I love it.
And out of this podcast, stories come out from the individuals that people know. And within those stories, they find things out. They discover shit because a person goes in depth about their life and about their trials and tribulations, etc. JB Smooth, I'm going to outright say it. You were responsible for my stage identity early on in my career. Kevin Hart did not know who he was on stage, so Kevin Hart was a parrot. I mimicked those that I saw. And JB, you acted as a major influence, because what you were doing on stage was so magnificent that I felt that's the only way that I can be funny.
Mm.
You would come out to music, you would do things and incorporate music. You know, you were so physical with falling, with using a stool, standing up on a stool. I mean, literally, like whatever you felt like you wanted to do, you would do. And I said, that's what I need to be. That's what the fuck I need to be.
I think, I think, you know, when we start to develop our brand of style of comedy, you know, it's always, you know, it's always great when you see potential in someone, you see what on their path. And I think, that's a compliment, man. I think you so much for saying that, Kevin. You know,
I mean it.
And, you know, and that's when comedy's changed a lot. It ain't what it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, you talking about no cell phone, you're talking about had to pull over, make a phone call, or you driving down the road to go to a show. Everything was different. It was a different process. It was like making something from scratch, basically.
Yeah.
There is no shortcut.
Yeah.
There was no shortcuts back then.
Well, the thing that I think this younger generation, you know, has no idea of is what you're the pioneer of, right? And when we're talking about that inclusion of music, you know, in with the set, right? What action took place and what tone of music could you attach to said action to amplify the action? Like you are the creator of the movie scene in your bit. You are the creator of, oh my God, I'm in a chariot. I stand up in the chariot and motherfucker, we start going fast and the music comes on and you going fast. All of a sudden you've turned your live performance into a movie. You've turned it into a real clear visual. And that physicality was one that everybody gravitated towards. Everybody gravitated towards, oh my God, JB motherfucking Smooth. You see the shit, JB. Everybody took a piece of that. Now, whether they'll say it or not, that's not up for me. I'm going to say it because I know where the fuck I got it from. And it took me quite some time to get out of that, to find my own voice. But for a while, you know, it was following the trend of what you know works. What I want to ask you is, how'd you develop that comedy style? Where did that come from?
I think what happens is, in my development, in my process, you know, I got lucky. I got a chance to hang around some really good, funny-ass people who would never put their ass on stage, ever. They would never microphone, but they were funny as hell. So I got lucky, man, in that process, you know, growing up in New York, of course. But I've always been a visual guy, you know. And I think what we do is, as comedians, because we love to do, the one thing we love to do is make people laugh. So we got to find a way to make people laugh. But every comedian has something about them that makes them able to be a comedian, whether it's a defense mechanism, whether it's a dream of theirs to do, but we all got something wrong with us that makes us want to make people laugh, because that's our defense mechanism. If you go to jail, the first thing you're going to do is try to be funny to keep motherfuckers off you. You know what I mean? Or you're going to be trying to be tough to keep people off you. You got two choices. You're going to be trying to be tough.
Absolutely.
You're going to try to be funny. And I think that's what funny does when you're in high school and you're the class clown or whatever you are. I think you find a way. And when you step on that stage, you know, that's when you start to find out what you want to give to the world and how much you want to give to people, because we are our own therapists sometimes. You got to be.
Absolutely.
You're helping people, but you got them helping yourself too on stage, you know?
When you talk about stepping on that stage, how did you find the stage? How did you get to the stage? Like, what was the decision for you to get to stand up?
You know, of course, we all have been inspired by somebody. I was inspired by, just like you said earlier, you were inspired by my style. And I was inspired by comedic actors growing up. You know, I love Red Fox, but I also love George Carlin, and I love love watching movies where people brought things to life.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that was going to be my style when I stepped on that stage. And that's something I've done since I started doing stand-up at Uptown Comedy Club in New York. You know, you didn't get a chance to experience Uptown Comedy Club because you were too young and you didn't start comedy yet.
Yeah. I heard about it though, JB. They say that bitch.
Oh, man.
They say it was nothing like it.
Nothing like it in the world, man. National Black Theater, lines around the corner. All these personalities, but this is the one thing I will say about the Uptown Comedy Club. It forced you to be original. It forced you to be something unique on that stage. And because we all were a part of this workshop, you couldn't mimic anybody. You couldn't do it, okay. Because we all shoot at night in the workshop, working on bits, sitting around in a big circle, Andre Brown, Kevin Brown, and it's kind of like if a bunch of the Avengers were sitting around in a goddamn circle comparing their powers. You know what I mean? Like, Superman can run. He can run fast as hell, but people know his ass for flying. You don't attach
facts.
A high fast Superman can run. You know he can fly fast, but you don't, like, if you want to, he can run his ass off. He's still Superman. He can run like a motherfucker, but you know him for flying. So we all sat around and we got a chance to work on our unique styles. And it was nurtured, you know what I mean? It was respected and nurtured to the point where that's all you knew how to do was your style. So when you got introduced at a comedy club where people come every week and they love to see the comedians, they already know when they call your name what they gonna get. They know what they're gonna get. They know your style already. Oh, I love this dude. Oh, I love this dude. He's one of my favorites. And you will hear people laughing before you even grab the mic because they already know this dude a nut. He's a fucking nut.
I mean, the thing though, when we're just talking about styles and you know, in that beginning time, the thing that, you know, I'm just gonna kind of stay on for a second. It's just how you honed yours, right? So falling into that groove of knowing the type of comic that you were going to be, falling into that space of like, okay, I got it. I got a handle on this shit. When did you get to that point? When did you get to the point where you started to shape and mold that bitch into the place of, I know my lane. This is where I'm going to be. This is who JB Smoove is on the stage.
I'm gonna tell you when I really honed it in. always being someone who loved to improv, to improvise, to be the party starter, the dude that would do nutty stuff in the moment. Quick thinking, painting pictures was my thing. You know, painting pictures on stage was my thing. And what honed that, what really got me figuring it out was I took an improv class at the Improv Comedy Club.
Oh, wow, okay.
This was an improv class, right? And what happened was I said to myself, I want to figure out what I want to be on that stage before I walk on that stage. Took a little improv class for the summer. Right after I finished that improv class, that club, improv comedy club in New York, shut down. It went away. There is no improv in New York anymore. So after that summer class, so I took that little tool and put it in my toolbox. And from that point on, my whole style was improvising. A lot of that stuff you see me do on stage, I make it up in a moment. Yeah, I know it don't work like that, but my brain, I work off of decibels. So when I hear laughter, it makes me turn the screw even more. It makes me keep going. And people just call me Milkman because I used to milk the shit out of jokes. I used to go on stage and do one joke for 15 minutes because I'm listening to us to hear, as opposed to just, I had bits, but I would do the bits different every time I did them because I never relied on the joke itself.
You are notoriously known. I call it getting all the meat off the bone. You're not going to leave a piece of chicken on a plate with meat on it. You know, when it comes to telling a joke, you're going to beat that joke the fuck up. And not in a way to where, you know, it's bad. I remember you had a joke about this guy with these shoes. He said, look at this motherfucker's shoes. Look at this motherfucker's shoes. God damn, look at these goddamn shoes. You said he had shoes on, and he said it looked like he had on two left feet. He said he was leaning to the side.
Yeah, it was a turned over shoes.
You stand up. Yes, the shoes was turned over. You said, look at this motherfucker's shoes. And you just keep going. You'll say something, and it always came back to, look at them motherfucking shoes right there. That motherfucker got them goddamn shoes on. Look at this motherfucker's shoes. You just keep.
First, I gotta make you understand where we at. If I say I'm in a club one night, guess what the audience sees? A club. Mm-hmm. If I say I walked in that club, I want to have a good damn time. I said, brother, walk by me. If I do this right here and I pretend the dude walked by me, everybody, one time I looked up, looking at the dude walk by, I looked at the audience, look at the dude walk by. And guess what people did? They all turned their goddamn head like that dude was walking by me for real. And I think when you start painting pictures and you put people in the club with you, they see stuff like that. And I think that's what makes a great joke is, and absolutely, that joke can change
absolutely
so much. Like you said earlier, I take everything at my disposal. If it's a certain kind of microphone, if it's a certain kind of, if there's a curtain behind me, I got four or five jokes I do just because of the curtain behind me. If it's a brick wall behind me, I do. There's certain things that you can do. I can lean on that brick wall. You can't lean on no curtain. So it's a certain, every night changes because of what's given to me. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, being a visual comedian, being someone who's, see, and I think that's, you build something that you don't know you're building sometimes. You know, and I think taking that improv class, I'll tell anybody, take an improv class. It's going to give you skills that you will never know you even needed. The ability to listen very intently. You know how much fun we have on the set? A real husband? We, of course, we got a little script there, but we don't follow that damn script.
Oh, my God.
We're doing what is naturally the ability to listen and the ability to know when to say something. And that's something that a lot of people don't have. Some people have a set, some stereotype set, and they run right through that set. Here's my, I like to, it's like going to war. You prepare for, that list of jokes is your game plan. Or that list of jokes is your battle plan. And you walk on that battlefield, right? You already you know how you see Game of Thrones? Mm-hmm. They had a big table, and they move things around and telling you, we're going to attack to the north, you know? And you get out there on that goddamn field, and you're the general, you're in front, and all the people behind, all the warriors behind you ready to charge. You say, charge, and you start charging, and someone yell, hey, they behind us. Oh, shit. You gotta turn this motherfucker around. God damn it. Open up. And they get through. You gotta run through the goddamn men to get back to the front of the back. Why you in the front of the fucking back? You fucked up. Now everybody out of order. Because everybody knows it put the people in the front who are able to be casualties because they don't give a fuck about them. They die first. Now they got the people who die first in the goddamn back, Kevin. They in the back now. Now they got to come through and can we get back to the front? Now all your good men are in the fucking front. Now you got to.
Oh my God.
That's the thing that happens in your head when you're not either getting a good laugh. You're like, fuck, I planned this set. This is what I planned. So I go on stage with no plan. Now, here's what I will tell you, though. I wouldn't recommend anybody do that shit. I wouldn't say to any young comic, do what the fuck I did. I wouldn't recommend it because you can steal jokes. You can mimic people, you can do all these things, but the one thing, the intangibles are, you still have to have those little nuances of things that you need to fucking progress.
Well, you're talking about a talent, right? I mean, of course, you're saying that you wouldn't recommend this, of course, to the younger generation because what you're talking about doing.
There was no plan, unless.
Yeah, this is a.
You gotta be willing to take the good with the bad. You gotta be willing to say, you know how hard it is being a physical comic and get off that goddamn ground when the laugh wasn't as big as you thought it would be, and you gotta get the fuck up off the ground. And you done did all that physical shit. You on the ground flapping around like someone and with a pretend someone a fish or some shit. You laying on down flapping around like you a goddamn fish or some shit. And come from that goddamn audience. You
gotta get your ass up. Not one. But you're special in this place because once again, this is a style significant or special to you because of what you do so well. You know, to the younger generation, it is good to be prepared. You know, have an idea of what you want to do, have a little more structure. But to be able to float in and outside of feeling, that's a different level of talent. When did comedy change your life, JB? When did the money change for you? Right? When did they go from doing spots to, oh my God, like I'm a well-paid headliner?
You know what I did, though? Here's the one thing that has always been something about me that I always felt like you can always make money.
Okay.
You can always make money. As long as you're healthy, you know, as long as you have your health, you know, which is a blessing to have, is your health, support. So if you have those things, you can always make money. Mm-hmm. Connections, mm-hmm. You know, relationships with certain people, you can always make money. You know, you show up on time, you stay late, all the intangibles that people will call you back for, you're pleasant, that right there will last forever. Money can't. So I've never been one to count my money. I go about, you know, if I like working with somebody, if I like a certain club, if I like a certain, that makes me go back because God damn it, I had a good time. And it's all this shit, man. Mm-hmm. We all want to make money to support our families, but I think what lasts longest is memories and the fun part about doing what we actually do. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that's a big plus in my decision making on everything I do. I do think that, you know, and I've been blessed to be able to do so many different things. Like, God bless anyone who wants to be on the road all their life. And they just love comedy clubs. But I use stand-up as my vehicle, of course. My vehicle was use stand-up as my vehicle to travel. that's going to be the thing that makes me travel a little bit. You know, it helps my timing. It helps me being able to get on stage and being able to connect with people, build my following, have people love me. You know, my shows are sold out all the time because I do it
all the time.
Specific thing that is love. And, you know, I'm up there, you know, I can do, I probably can do 3 hours if I wanted to.
I was going to say, JB, what is your... What are you ending your set at these days? Are you an hour? Are you 2 hours? What are you doing on stage?
Right now on my tour, I'm doing an hour and a half.
Hour and a fucking
half. And that's so I've never been a 15-minute comic. Never been, you know, early days, I would do 10 minutes, but I'll do one joke for 15 minutes, you know, sometimes. And, you know, it's not a lot of, but it's less than one joke. You know, that's hour the fun thing about day. It.
Oof.
So, you know, but that's my rhythm, you know, that's me going in different places with it and then being able to, you know, that's kind of the fun part about it, you know, and the uniqueness of being able to go on that stage, entertain people and hold them. The thing about it for an hour and a half,
that's the key. And that's a long, by the way, to our listeners, that's a long fucking set. I mean, right now I'm doing 58. I'm doing 58.
Yeah.
I'm doing 58. And I didn't say 55. I didn't say an hour. I said 58. I took it to the dot. I'm out of there. 58. That's a long fucking time, right. JB. That's a long goddamn time.
Sometimes I see it as, here's another thing I see it as. I see it as almost like doing a play.
Okay.
And that's how I got to think about it in my mind because I am literally, and people can tell when I'm making shit up. They know it. And they could tell by my expression that I just made that shit up on the spot. Because I truly believe you, if you're going to do a style like this, like what I do, you open. Which is why the set turns into that long, because you end up going down a, sometimes the audience is driving, and you're a passenger. You literally are a passenger in that damn car, in that show, because they're driving where you need to go at. Okay. You know, and you can tell by what they're laughing at. So you give them more, well, whatever they're laughing at, you give them more of that, you know, which makes the show unique, you know. And I think that's what, you know, that's what keeps me entertained, because I truly believe you got to make yourself laugh also in this thing, because otherwise you wouldn't enjoy doing it. And you're really only doing it for money. Or you're only doing it for girls. I had a dude tell me that one time on the road. He just said, you know what, I'm only doing this shit for the girls.
Oof. Ugh.
I said, ooh.
Ugh.
I said, well,
ugh.
When you get back to a regular job again at some point, you will be.
When this don't work. Hey, well, when this don't work. When this don't work out for you, brother. That's what you should
say. This ain't gonna work out. Yeah. You magnify. You in other people's way right now. So get the fuck out the way and stop doing it for that reason. You are in the way of other people who are dying to do it. Time up on that stage, because all you want to do is get off the stage, meet girls, or whatever.
Your passion is in the wrong place.
Your passion ain't the wrong place.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Home isn't just a place. It's a state of mind. Like curling up in a comfy chair as you watch the world go by.
Good afternoon.
Which is why at Delta, our people do our best to make you feel at home long before you get there. Delta, keep climbing.
Let's talk about your transition, man. Let's talk about the transition from you being the stand-up comic, you know, you then, of course, going and becoming a headliner. And now we're talking about the world of acting and opportunities that come from it, right? You are a fucking go-to guy. You're a weapon. You are known for the funny, to be the funny, you know, big screen, small screen, whatever. What was the first opportunity? What was the breaking moment for you?
Man, Kevin, I've done it all, man. I will say this is 32 years in.
32 bro. Years?
32 years in.
Good, JP.
32 years in. And, you know, blessed to be able to have as much fun. And that's why I say, you know, I'll say this. God bless you. Because, you know, here's the thing that you have to maintain as Kevin Hart. You know how people say there's a ceiling. You gotta always keep your hand on that ceiling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You gotta have that ceiling right there where it's at all the time. Because people expect Kevin Hart to be. Kevin Hart is up there. Kevin Hart is up there. Your hand is on the ceiling. You know? You can jump up and touch that motherfucker, but they are in the middle of the room somewhere. They're about up here. I'm cool as shit being right there. Mm-hmm. I always go up. As long as I don't go down, I'm cool. But if I can just do this for the rest of my career, and that's why I've been my whole career, is I've had these peaks and valleys that are awesome, that I got a chance to, you know, the first thing I ever done, you know, I've done everything. When I first started doing, like I said, I went to the improv class and I started doing stand-up, you know, I did extra work just to see how it felt to be on
really?
The set.
Really? Yeah. How old were you when you did the extra work?
Oh, shit, man. I'm probably 19 years old.
Wow. Maybe.
Oh, I just was doing fun stuff. I said, I'll try this. I'll hang out on the set and see what it's like, you know? But that's me starting out in stand-up. Starting out, just still trying to figure out sets here and there, but doing that type of stuff. But, you know, and of course, I've done literally everything. I did the first, once I started getting going, I did the first pilot on MTV, Apartment 2F with the Scar Brothers. You know, I worked with, you know, one of the first movies I ever did was a movie called Tomorrow Night, Louis C.K. You name it, man.
What do you think was your breakout role? What's the role do you think that you had that catapulted you into this space of like consistency within work?
I would say, it's hard, man. See, my path bounced around a little bit. You know, as far as what I did in New York, doing all the everything I had to do in New York, I did. You know, all the shows, Friday Night Videos, and all these kind of shows I've done as stand-up. And when I got into the acting part, I think the sketch came before the acting. You know, of course, I did Pootie Tang, one of the first crazy bigger movies, and then just started building from there. One day, I was on a radio show one time, and the dude pulled up my IMDb, and he started reading stuff off. And it was shit that I totally forgot about. I ain't gonna lie. He pulled the IMDb up, man. That was funny. And he started running stuff off. It was so much shit that I forgot about that I did. No, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh shit, I forgot about that. Oh, I forgot about that too. Even at the Comedy Central, you know, they had something called short attention span theater. I did a lot of firsts. You know, a lot of, you know, and that's a blessing because someone will call you for their pilot. Someone will call you for their first. And I think that's one thing that helped me a lot was to find myself. TV and film, that kind of stuff, you know, if I really go back and count, there's pockets of stuff, man. I can't even pinpoint. Like what?
You can't pinpoint the one thing. You can't go to the.
I don't think there is. It's like there is no one thing. Mm-hmm. Going back to what we talked about, I don't think there is one thing. I think everything that I've ever done helped. You know, the commercials, lending my voice in animation. you know, TV, film, you know, I think all that right there, you know, made me like a chameleon, you know, a chameleon of some sort, you know, and that allowed me to do so many different things. So some people get lucky in their own. I'm like this. I'm all over the goddamn place. I'm doing things that I like. I'm doing things that I love. And my phone rings like a motherfucker. So here's the thing that I think is important. I turn down more things than I take.
I like that. I like that.
You take every goddamn thing. I don't take everything. I take what interests me or what I think I can show up and give you the director what you need. If you're going to be there for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, either we have a past relationship or you want me to give you something that you're missing. And that's what, as long as the phone keeps ringing, man, I can do this shit forever. Because, like I said before, I come early, I stay late. I give you what you want. I make sure I'm pleasant. All these intangibles are what keep the phone ringing continuously. You know, I make sure.
I like that.
That's the thing. That's the one thing that I think that's missing in a lot of people's, a lot of comics, a lot of actors' DNA is the intangible things that really matter the most. You can get there and do your thing, but if you get there and do your thing and people don't like you, or people feel a weird vibe from you, or all these different things, it changes your direction. It changes how many times your phone going to ring. You sit there and stare at the goddamn phone and keep picking the goddamn phone up. You think the phone broke, but your phone ain't ringing. But, you know, I think, you know, there's just no, I hate to say I don't believe in plans. I truly believe in the way I do it.
And yeah, I was gonna say it's not. I don't think it's about you.
Anybody to do it like me.
It's not you not believing in the plan. That's just not. You're not a structured. You're not the structure has to. These bricks got to go in a row. That's not what you are. That's not who you are. You are a nomad to a certain degree, and you know you're the guy that's going to figure it out. But you also have fun within the approach to figuring it out, and whether that be on stage, whether that be towards the things that you want to do in the space of acting, the opportunities come. But like you said, you're not taking everything. But some amazing opportunities have found you. Tell me how the Larry David relationship happened.
You know what? Here's another thing. Yeah, that started from, I'll jump back a little bit to one, being a big fan of the show, big fan of the show. Two, leaving LA, coming off of Cedric the Entertainer Presents sketch show, loving it, having a great time. We only did one season, that was terrible, but we, it was an amazing show to be a part of. And opportunity came, it will be my second time auditioning for Saturday Night Live. Did it, you know, it was-
Holy shit, twice.
Oh, twice I went for it. Tracy was on the show that time, the first time. The second time I did it, I actually made it all the way to my NBC test. So I made it all the way to the NBC test. It came down to Finesse, Keenan, and myself. Mm. Great, great opportunity, man. You know, they gave it to Finesse.
By the way, this is a great class. This is a great fucking class.
Great class, man. So they gave it to Kenny and Finesse. I got they called me. I ended up they ended up offering me a writing job. So I had to be like, God damn, I had something on the table in LA. So I had to see, I do things for different reasons. So I said, you know what? Should I go back to New York? And I was like, well, you know, this would look great on my resume. So in other words, I'm a seed planter. I'm gonna do that. We'll plant a seed and see what grows out of it. So that's what I was, a seed being planted, and me from actually auditioning and making it to the, you know, people with tribal, they would say, "Nah, fuck that. I went for a cast member. Fuck, I'm on a sit behind a goddamn computer and type some fucking jokes for them." So like, some people would say, "Nah, I'm good."
This is great information because I bet people
say that. But I say, you know what? I'm going to go back. I'm going to take a chance. So this is going to look good on my resume. I go back to L.A. I knock out, you know, I do. But here's my thing. I'm gonna jump for it in a minute. So what I did was I got there. I said, I'm going to put the New York Hustle on it. So what I did was I went back to New York. I was a writer on the show. I did warm up for two seasons on the show. I was in monologues here and there, sketches here and there. And I fucked around, and Conan O'Brien was still at NBC at that time. So I ended up doing Conan. He called upstairs. This is what I mean by planting seeds. You know, a bunch of writers down on Conan found out I was at them desk typing fucking jokes. Listen, J.B. Smoove upstairs, he's a writer. They said, and they called Lorne Michaels and said, can we borrow J.B. here and there? Man, I did Conan O'Brien probably 11 times while I was working at SNL as a writer.
Just because they heard phone. Because they heard you were upstairs. They heard J.B. is up there. Holy shit. This is a relationship that we would love.
He would call my office and say, J.B., it's Lorne. Conan wants to borrow you for a sketch. You know, I'm going to help him out and come on back upstairs. I would go down to the elevator, go down there and do a sketch, get back in the elevator, come upstairs, get me back behind the goddamn computer, typing goddamn jokes. And that's five fucking checks. If I count my warm-up check, my monologue check, my once in a while being in sketches, and my Conan O'Brien check, that's five checks I was getting just because I love to do those things outside of what I was. I like those more than I like writing, because I was in front of the camera again. But, so then I did three seasons on SNL. My fourth season, I didn't get renewed. But here's
you did
my
three seasons on SNL, JB?
Writing for three seasons on
SNL. What year was this?
04, 5, and 6.
Wow.
Yep.
Holy cow.
Here's the thing. Here's the chess move part of the business. You got to have confidence in what you do and be content with the decisions that you make based on what you bring to the table and having that confidence in what you do. My fourth season, I didn't get renewed my fourth season because I said, you know what? I need a change. So I was already on the show. Here's how my movement was. I didn't even have an agent when I was on the show. You know, I got that just on strength. You know, hustling. And here's what I did. I fired my agent, and knowing that I would more than likely not be going back to SNL. A lot of people will be saying, nah, fuck that, I need my job. But what I said, nah. It don't sit right with me. My movement is not sitting right with me. I'm not being met in the middle. I'm hustling for myself more than what my agent is doing.
Okay, you noticed that you were out working your agent.
Yeah. And I knew if I got rid of my agent, I wasn't gonna go back to SNL. I knew that there would be no one to speak up for me. You know, people speak up for you, and they make sure. I said, I know I'm not gonna go back, because once I fire my agency, I'm not gonna go back. But that's having enough faith in what you do, knowing you'll find something else. So from the time I let my agent go, from the time I left, I got back on the road doing a little stand-up, I was watching Curb one night. Me and Shaw were watching Curb, right? We loved that show. We were laughing our ass off. I said, baby,
my listeners, that's his wife, by the way, just for context.
Oh, yeah, my wife, Shaw. So I said, I would love to be on this show one day. We laughing our ass off of Larry. And then Shaw said, you know what? You're going to be on that show one day. She said, I could see you and Larry together. Mm. Let me tell you something, how the universe works, man.
Holy cow.
I tell everybody how the universe works.
Holy cow.
Sometimes you throw things to the universe and you don't even know why, but I said, I'm going to tell you, a month and a half, I signed with a new agent, right? About a week or two after, I didn't go back. Got back on the road again, do a little stand-up. Just stay busy. Signed with a new agent. I go on the road, I'm in, and I had a show that night, just get back to the door. My phone rings, and someone says, hi, JB, this is I'm a friend of OG. Now, OG Pierce, OG was a producer. He did the song, "This Is How We Do It."
Okay.
This ain't how Montel Jordan. Me and OG about to make
some This is how we do it.
And okay. That song. Great friend of mine. I find out he passes away, right? He passed away. I was like, oh, shit. I said, baby, OG passed away. So, and I met OG on the Cedric the Entertainer show. This is so crazy how this story goes.
It's all lining up.
He was music producer on the Cedric the Entertainer show. That's where I met him at. Team good friends with him. You know, get the phone call and say he passed away. I said, oh, my God. So I got to go to L.A. for one day for his memorial service. One day, pay my respects to OG, and I'm going to come on back home. I get out there. I say, you know what? I'm going to go visit my new agent and say hi to him. Just to say what I'm going to do moving forward. Now that I'm not at SNL anymore, I'm going to tell my new agent what I want to do. So I go over there. Yeah, you know how you go to meet the agency and they got all the goddamn blue suits around that fucking table. I don't know how they all got a fucking blue suit for some goddamn matrix. You know, they all around that goddamn table. Right? You're the head of the table. And they're like, so what you want to do? And all these motherfuckers duplicates of each other. And they're all sitting around that damn table. And I said, okay. I don't know yet. You know, I'm kind of feeling it out. Looking back, you know, from behind that damn computer. But then one agent walks in and said, hey, man, I got an audition here. I don't know what you're doing, but if you want to, how long are you in town? Because I leave town tomorrow. I only came in town when my buddy passed away. So I said, what's it for? And they said, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I said, get the fuck out of here. I said, I love Curb Your Enthusiasm. They said, can you go right now? I said, hell yeah, I'll go right now. Office, cold, not knowing shit, Kevin. See, this is what I'm talking about. You don't know what path you're going to drive because you can't plan anything no more. I couldn't plan that. I couldn't plan in a million years what just happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
I go over there to the damn audition. Everybody's in there. Kevin, everybody's in that motherfucker. Everybody I know is in there about to go in. I'm like, oh, okay. Damn, everybody's over here, you know? Comedians, male comedians, everybody, they gotta build this family that's gonna be standing with Larry David on the show. So I already decided, I know what this dude is. So my thing is this, I tell people, this is a great thing to do if you have a character there. I go in the room, I like to go in my auditions as a character.
Good shit, JB.
I don't like going in there as myself, so you gotta turn them off and on.
Yeah.
It's too much putting the character of Leon. You know what I'm saying? It's too much of a separation. Now you go in that room, see, that's how my improv skills came in. I came in that room. Hey, Ken, I walked in that damn room. I shook shit up. I came in as a character. I came in above my chest. Yo, they don't want to call security because they know who the fuck I was. I'm walking there looking around the room like, yo, so what's up? I walk in there shuffling, like, just walking like Leon walk, and my little head tilt going on. Larry said, I said, okay, Larry, they said, you're going to improvise with Larry. I said, oh, cool. Let's do it, Larry. I said, I don't know, anything could happen. I might fuck around and slap you in the face. I don't know, anything could happen. And Larry looked at me like, what the fuck? Like, you looked at me and everybody, the producers, like, what the fuck is this dude? You know, what the fuck is wrong with him? You know, and he put a smirk on his face, and that's when I knew I had
his ass. He had his ass. First of all, let's just.
I had to drive the car.
Walking in the room and. As Leon is brilliant. Let's just acknowledge that. Fucking brilliant. Just you going in that bitch with the tone and attitude of Leon, yeah. It's game changer. Game changer.
Now you control the room. You control the room now. See, I'm not at the mercy of the producers or Larry. I'm driving the goddamn car.
How long
is this? Now that, guess what that is?
What is that?
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert. And I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert. And I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure. Because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a stand-up part of it.
Yes, that's a stand-up. Stand-up came in play.
Stand-up, but it's also me taking that goddamn improv class fucking 1991 and putting that tool in that toolbox until I needed it. I still use stand-up. I still use improv in my stand-up, but I put that little tool in that toolbox. Now, who would know I would go from taking that class, putting that tool in my toolbox, greatest improvised show in the history of TV.
It truly is. It truly is. And for our listeners, JB, who may not know, when you say the greatest improvised show in the history of TV, how much of a script do you guys actually have?
An outline, maybe 8-page outline, and no dialogue, zero dialogue, outline, whatever you want to do, whatever your... You know, wherever you know. Here's the thing I love about it. Yeah. You create your own, basically. So you got whatever you say goes, basically. And this helped me because my character didn't have an origin. He didn't know where the fuck I came from. All he knew is
you developed it.
All he knew was Vivica was my sister, and I just came to the door because I found out she was dead. And I ended up living in the damn house with my sister. And that was the funny part. Every time Larry said, no, you live with me. No. I live with my sister. I don't fucking know you, Larry.
What the fuck I look like living with you, Larry?
I don't live with you.
What the fuck I look like living with you, Larry? I don't know you.
I don't even know you. Why can I live with you? I don't fucking know you. And that was a funny ass argument we had all the time on set. I don't live with your ass. I don't fucking know you.
That relationship that you guys have, of course, has grown. I mean, you're in how many seasons? How many seasons have you been on now?
Oh shit, man! I've been on five seasons.
Goddamn! Let's shift gears. Let's talk about the JB Smoove Kevin Hart relationship. We do a show called Real Husbands of Hollywood. Yeah. We knock out five seasons and we take a break, a significant break. And, you know, we then make the decision to come back and do it again. The whole band gets back together again. Talk to me about the reemerging of Real Husbands of Hollywood and what this project is for you.
This is a great, man, this is, you know, we always talk about this. I've been blessed to be able to have, by design, the ability to do multiple things, you know, and we a few seasons in Real Husbands of Hollywood of how I do have this multi-demographic that I can play around with because I perform in a straight line. You know, some comedians have, you know, the black people do this, white people do this, jokes and shit. I perform more in a straight line. So I listen because of the variety of things that I have done, I'm well-rounded. Okay. Meaning, I can do Curb Enthusiasm, which is probably a majority white audience. I can do Till Death. I can do The Millers. But at the same time, I can do Cedric Entertainment Presents. I can do The Chris Rock Show. I can do Real Husbands of Hollywood.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's the one blessing I will say. You know, even if I tell people, you don't have to do, but understand both types of shows so you stay busy. And being able to do Real Housewives in Hollywood, you know, that is, it allows each and every one of us to play this crazy, over-exaggerated versions of ourselves.
Absolutely. It's the best.
Which is a fucking blessing to be able to do.
It's the best.
It's perfect. No one has to stretch. No one has to do anything. But they would say,
you know what? And,
you know,
I feel like it's a gym. I feel like it's a comedy gym for us. Right? Mm-hmm. Like when you talk about improv, when you talk about, you know, stand up, I feel like Real Husbands of Hollywood allows us to work a muscle.
Yeah.
that you don't get to work otherwise. Granted, you're in a situation because of the Curb Your Enthusiasm. You get to work that muscle. You get to play.
I get to play.
You get to play. This here, this is the space where I get to work that muscle. The relationships that we have, the friendships that we have, and knowing our comfort zone with one another, it allows us to go so far, so fucking far. And like, JB, when I tell you, I can't wait for people to see this season. I can't wait for people to see the season. Like, I think they're truly going to be blown away just by how fucking stupid we are, man.
This is the thing I think that benefits us this season. You know, 5 years ago, TV wasn't at this point where it is right now. You
Absolutely
know,
not.
5 years ago, you weren't seeing shows like shows on Amazon, shows on Hulu, shows on Netflix, winning all these awards. This is the time waiting those 5 years. You know, it's a long time to be away from each other, but I truly believe it puts more eyes on the show now. None of us were who we were, you know, from when we first started doing this show.
No.
This is about 10 years ago, right? No. The original show came out 10 years ago, right? The original show.
You're probably 9 or 10 years, absolutely.
At least. So yes. TV wasn't anywhere where it is right now. You're talking about doing this show, and now we have this opportunity and ability to do an even realer version of The Real Husbands of Hollywood, because
absolutely.
Now we're on BET Plus. Now we're like more language, more real situations. You know, this is, and more eyes are going to be on the show. Now, I truly believe from being there with you guys, there's no reason in the world that this show should be nominated for something.
Oh, my God.
It is truly in the mix with any show.
JB, there's nothing like it.
Any show.
There's nothing like it.
Any show you want to nominate, there's no reason why this show shouldn't be nominated for something, because this is classic comedy, edgy enough, funny enough, relatable enough, all the things that make a great show, and the cast is amazing. A bunch of knuckleheads actually are friends is what makes this show what it is.
Well, you said it perfectly. I mean, I think the thing that's really special is that everybody scores on our show, right? I don't believe that there's a star. Like, I'm not the star of Real Husbands of Hollywood. I know that's how it appears to be. You know, my name is on it, but I'm not the star of that show. You know, we all collectively play a massive role in everybody. If we were a basketball team, everybody walks away with 15 to 20 per game. Everybody's averaging double figures in stats and rebounds and assists, because everybody can score. And at any point, you know, the storylines can be thrown on any one of us. And we all carry the weight of it. And it's so unique. It's so dope. And it doesn't exist. You know, what you said is true. It doesn't exist. And people, y'all be fucking blown away. You know, we dropping Real Husbands of Hollywood. This, it's a by demand, popular demand. You know, we came back with a limited series. We did 6 episodes. It's going to be a plus. But you guys are definitely going to get smacked in the mouth with a fucking batch of comedy that you really needed. Smacked in the mouth. And JB is fucking, he's so ridiculous. JB is so ridiculous on this season. I can't even put it into words. Here's what I can tell you about his character.
See, I told Larry the same thing. I said, Larry, you be underhand. No, I'm a swing at that damn ball. So, you know, I think we underhand pitch enough just to give some space, some breathing room in what you wanna say and bring, you know, to the show. I think that's but again, this is like, you know, we go back, going back to that room of those unique powers, sitting around talking about how they're going to save the world. I think it's one of those moments again where you have these unique abilities. You know, some of us can fly, or we can run too. Some of us are, you know, bulletproof. Some of us are, you know, and I think that's how you got to look at these ensemble of unique talents and unique people and unique personalities who in common, we all friends. And I think that's what makes this show so unique and so fun, man. And yeah, I'll say it again. There's no reason why this show should be nominated for something, man.
It will. It will be. You just mark my words, JB. And remember, I said it to you. Mark my fucking words. It will be. I don't have a doubt in my mind that it will be. And I also don't have a doubt that you're going to see an abundance of love and appreciation for you, your performance, your talent after people seeing this. And, you know, I love that you gave some tidbits, man. You know, during this, you and your approach to just like playing chess, right? Like, you know, after stand up, after headlining, making a chess move to go and fucking do the writing thing and then going down to Conan, like your road and your untraditional path to where you are, man, is one that people should not only understand, but just fucking just acknowledge, right? It doesn't have to be about a book. Sometimes you can write your own, man. And JB is proof of that. You're proof of that, dude.
You have to. And I go back to, I tell young people all the time, you know, I'm a big, big boys, girls club guy. So I tell young people all the time, you know, don't let anybody talk you out of anything, you know. And another thing I think about is one thing you'll never see me do, blame myself. I never think people should explain themselves. You are going to live with your decisions. Okay. You're going to live with your path. And when you explain yourself, you are diminishing your path and your journey because you are making an excuse that someone else wants you to give them. So I don't believe yourself, especially the people who you don't know. You know what I'm saying? When you explain yourself, you are really making an excuse not to move forward in something that you want to do and how you want to do it, you know? And I think it's very important for all of us who are in this industry, young people want to be in front of this camera, to be inspired by the stuff that we do, but also to hear the journey, hear how they do it that way, but just hear how they did it, you know? Yeah, I think that's the fun part, man. I mean, I'm having, man, I don't say how old I am, but I saw you clown somebody in this damn
show. Yeah, Don Cheadle. Damn, you don't want to hear the damn.
You already know how old my ass is. So, you know, I just turned 56. Say Kevin really quick. I have locked myself in as who I think people are going to remember you a certain way. You know how you see that that diner? In that damn diner was Elvis Presley and James Dean. And, you know, you have all these, you know, or you see an old photo of Martin Luther King, or you see an old photo of, you know, any, it was Pryor in his heyday. You know, you at some point, how people see you, you stop. And how they remember you is etched in stone. No matter how old your ass get, no matter what happens, you stop at a certain point and people think about you, think about you, a certain image of you that's locked in. And I think if you can think, if you can think like that, you can achieve what you need to achieve no matter what you do in life. And I think that, you know, I'm having a blast right now. This version of JB is having a blast. At 56 years old, I feel like I felt when I was 30 years old.
You look great. You know? You look great.
Yeah, I tell people, hey, you're a big proponent of taking care of yourself and stuff. Take care of the vehicle you are driving, and you are driving you. Take care of yourself, and everything else comes, man. If you could just have your health and your sanity, you gonna be good.
JB, you got those things. And you got an amazing career, an amazing woman. And the key thing is happy. And I love that you are happy. And I'm proud of you.
Yeah, man.
I'm happy that I can call you a friend, a brother, And more importantly, I'm happy, dude, that we get to share the things that we share together in this business. We got memories. You know, we've been in this thing for a long time, and we are 1,000% connected. You know, we're 1,000% in tune. And dude, I think that you still got so much more to give. And for my listeners, this is why I do the podcast. I do it for you guys to get these tidbits, to get this information, to get the knowledge and understanding of the guy that you think that you may have known that you realize you don't know. And this guy here, man, he's a walking display of fucking happiness. JB, I love you. I appreciate you. This is Comedy Gold Mines. You know what we do here? We get into the minds of amazing comedians. And oh my God, what an amazing mind this was today. JB Smooth, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Jay.
You're the man. Appreciate you.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.
Hi, it's Stephen Colbert, and I'm here to tell you about The Late Show Pod Show, which is the podcast of The Late Show with me, Stephen Colbert, and I'm here with my producer of the podcast, Becca. Hi, Becca.
Hi, Stephen.
So what do people get when they listen to The Late Show Pod Show? Let's sell this thing.
The extended moments, for sure, because we run out of time for broadcast, but we have plenty of time on the podcast.
It's kind of like being a live audience member of the show because you get things that no one else hears. Listen to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert wherever you get your podcasts.
At Delta, we know Mike in 8C prefers reality TV to reality. So we provide more than 1,000 hours of in-flight entertainment. On the next flight, 8C is Mandy, a foodie. So we offer all types of food options. Because at Delta, everyone flies their own way. Delta, keep climbing.